Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Jeff Yang has been covering the Asian American community for more than three decades. He launched one of the very first national magazines that focused on Asian Americans. Now Jeff has taken things to the next level with a book called Rise, A Pop History of Asian America from the 90s to Now. He co-wrote it with his friends Phil Yu and Philip Wong. Journalist Lisa Ling says that Rise made her feel so proud at a moment when so many Asian Americans have been questioning their belonging in America. Jeff tells us why he and his friends decided to write this book.
Looking at the fact that these 30 years in which each of us three grew up, I mean, granted, at different portions of those 30 years, represented something really pivotal in the way that Asian Americans were both depicted in the world, but also the way we saw ourselves. And yet, it's also a portion of our history that has really gone mostly untold and certainly undocumented. And so we first got together to put together the idea for this book under the assumption that it would be sort of like filling in that donut hole, just celebrating all the different ways in which the last three decades have been pivotal to the evolution of our community. And then we had this global pandemic. And with that came this unprecedented wave, it felt, of anti-Asian hostility and xenophobia. And we kind of realized that more than just celebrating what had happened for the last 30 years, we also felt the need to almost put it in a time capsule or a hope chest, where if everything were to somehow go away, if all the hard-won success we'd gotten to had started to just shatter under the weight, we would have something to rebuild with. We'd have a blueprint.
Yeah. In 1989, you and some friends created a new publication called A Magazine. Why?
So I graduated actually that year, and I remember having a very similar moment as the one I had ultimately with Phil and Philip a couple of years ago, where I stood on my bed in my dorm room exhorting these friends of mine to move with me to New York City and try to launch an Asian American magazine, because at the time, magazines were where it was at. If you had a magazine, then you could kind of say your community, your part of the world existed in some fashion, like planting a flag. I mean, back in the 1990s, being Asian American was something people were still a little tentative about. People would say, yes, you know, I'm Asian American. My parents are from name a place in Asia, but I don't really want to call myself an Asian American author, an Asian American performer, an Asian American director, because they were concerned that using that combination, the adjective and the noun, if you will, would limit them in some fashion. It would basically put them in a box from which they could no longer escape. If you're an Asian American writer, you can only write Asian American stuff. And that was something that a lot of people wanted to avoid. Well, I mean, here we are, three decades and change later, and it's no longer something where being Asian American feels like something you have to see as a liability. It's not something that you have to somehow hide. We are kind of defiantly Asian American in some cases, certainly resiliently Asian American. But most importantly, we no longer feel quite the same need to explain ourselves. We can just be sort of Asian American and have that stand for itself. And I think that A Magazine was, in that first decade, looking ahead to a time when being Asian American didn't feel like something you had to constantly explain or apologize for.
Mm-hmm. And it's sad that there was a point when, you know, for the longest time you did have to do that, which was just kind of insane that that was the case. You also worked as a TV critic for The Village Voice, and you say that the biggest turning point in your journalism career was a result of this gig. What happened?
All American Girl, which was a television series that ABC developed around Margaret Cho. And Margaret Cho was and is iconic. I mean, she paved the way in so many different ways for Asian American comedy. Basically, Margaret Cho walked so Ali Wong could fly. And so, for that matter, Margaret Cho could fly, because she remains one of the biggest stars in the stand-up comedy pantheon. But back then, she was at the height of her early career, and at the time, ABC and other networks were basically minting sitcoms by taking stand-up comics, their sets, their comedy, their vibe, and then translating them into a half-hour sitcom format. And so they built this show, All American Girl, around her. And I had just been named TV critic at the Village Voice, one of several, but the only one of color and the only one certainly who was Asian American. And my editor asked me to review the first four episodes of this new show, All American Girl.
What do you think your mom would say if she could see us now?
Oh, I know what she'd say. No tongue kissing! No tongue kissing!
Well, guess I better take off.
Thanks for the movie.
That was good, huh? That was weird, though, with all those empty seats, the way that Korean guy sat right next to you.
It was not a good show. It was a show that, more importantly, I thought, really, I think, betrayed Margaret's own comedy herself. She's raw and bawdy and out there and just way over the top. And in this show, she was much more like, she even calls herself Fonzie from Happy Days, as opposed to who she actually is in real life. And I wrote that into the review, honestly, in a pretty acidulous way, right? So the next morning, I got a call, actually, from Margaret. This is the morning, actually, after it published. And she said, I heard you wrote a review of All American Girl. Can you send it to me? And so I faxed it to her. Again, another outmoded technology, knowing full well that she was going to flip out. And she did. She called me again right afterward and said, you know, other people had warned me about it. I didn't realize how bad and how mean a review was going to be. I'm going to tell you right now, you're one of the only Asian Americans with a TV critic beat. And in fact, you may be the only one with a consistent TV critic beat. When they cancel the show, if they cancel the show, they're going to take this review and throw it on the table and say, even your own community doesn't support this. Why should we? And she wasn't entirely wrong. Because the show got canceled after 19 episodes. They didn't even really give it a chance to evolve and to shift its focus to align more with Margaret, perhaps. I was reminded of this because years later, Margaret did a one-woman show called I'm the One That I Want, in which an entire section of it, without using my name, was basically about me and what she saw as a betrayal.
I was not wholeheartedly embraced by all of the Korean community. One Korean media action leader decided that I was dangerous and that he would be monitoring my activity and protesting at the first opportunity. I reacted like a Korean Courtney Love. I called him at home in the middle of the night. What they talking about? I suppose I could have handled that better.
Again, she wasn't entirely wrong. I felt like after that experience that we were such a fledgling population in terms of where we were in culture that I didn't want to be in the position of just, you know, doing the thumbs up, thumbs down in that sense. I wanted to amplify and elevate and give people a chance to decide for themselves what they thought was worthy, what they were interested in, because it was so little. And because we as Asian Americans had no room for mediocrity, much less disaster. If we did something wrong, then it would kind of like salt the earth for the next two decades, which is kind of what happened with All American Girl.
You say that the golden age of Hong Kong cinema gave hope to you and other Asian Americans who were coming of age in the 80s and the 90s. How so?
One of the things that was really amazing about Hong Kong cinema as it became this subculture, this fandom-driven underground, is that for the first time, we started to see Asian faces, not just as heroes and villains and love interests and romantic ingenues and slapstick comedians, right? But as everybody. I mean, it was the first time we actually started to see Asian faces across the board. We certainly weren't seeing that in Hollywood, and it made a huge difference because it helped us recognize that we didn't have to actually just be slotted into a single kind of role, the sidekick, the villain, the temptress, right? That we had both the capacity to fill other roles and to do so in a way that would cause heads to spin. Remember, you know, Hong Kong cinema at the time was also just taking huge risks. I mean, real ones, you know, not just narratively, but risks to life and limb. There were people doing things with their bodies.
This is Wusheng. That's Hana. Dump them into the sea.
But why?
I said dump them into the sea. Brother. He shows up and you manage to get out of a high security prison? Those two are cops, you idiot! Now kill them both!
What that meant was that for those of us who grew up with these things, who grew up with the original content in language, seen in smoky Chinatown theaters or on much redubbed videotapes, we had an edge. Our friends might be first discovering, this guy Bruce Lee is amazing. Jackie Chan, did you see that? And we'd be like, oh yeah, been there, done that. So it was a twofold thing. On the one hand, it really stretched our own horizons by helping us see the world and ourselves differently, but also it made us cool for the first time.
Yeah. In 2015, ABC made history with a show called Fresh Off the Boat. It was the first primetime network sitcom about an Asian American family in 20 years. I guess maybe since All American Girl. It also happened to star your son, Hudson Yang, as the lead, Eddie Wong. What do you think Hudson learned about what it means to be an Asian American from being a part of the show?
What's really interesting about Hudson and many of his peers is that the things that we had to actually defend or constantly define or rationalize are things that he sort of takes for granted.
Screw it, I'm out. I've been wanting someone to pass me those dumplings for half an hour, but I don't know how to say give me them dumps in Mandarin.
Mama, woman Ingla.
There are things shown in that show, and that show is set in the 1990s. That show is set in a period of time when I was fully encountering these things in the real world myself, right? But the very first episode has him, as Eddie Wong, bringing his lunch from home to school, right? And his lunch is leftover Chinese food from the day before, which is what I ate like every single day in school. And all the white kids had never seen it before. They said it smells. They mock him and he's forced to eat lunch out back behind the school with the janitor. And it just sort of highlights the fact that being Asian is alienating, or was alienating back in the 1990s. But Hudson has never experienced that. I mean, if he were to bring, when he brought Chinese food to school, all of his friends were like, I want to eat that. I will gladly trade you this meatball hero for your food. You know, kids are eating sushi. You know, it's like the world is so different for him. And so I think for him, it was as much as anything else, a reinforcement of how far we'd come when he played a role that was anchored in such a very different view of an Asian American reality from the one he was actually experiencing.
What is your hope for the future of Asian American representation in pop culture?
I would like to see, more than anything else, the same kind of ease and confidence and ability to sort of stand up and tell stories without having to feel like we need to translate or explain, without a feeling of a need to create a buffer zone culturally around the things that we do and the people that we are, that, you know, really virtually every other community who is part of this larger pop cultural ecosystem, Hollywood and beyond, already can indulge in. What that really means is we have been held to the standard of never being able to be mediocre. And the luxury to be mediocre is something which, more than anything else, is a core part of feeling like you've been accepted in a society. Because not everything is going to be a blockbuster, not everything is going to be a critical success. But just because you have failed or done middling should not mean that you're exiled to the wilderness forever. And that luxury to be mediocre is perhaps what I wish for most for Asian America.
Yeah, well, let's hope that happens. Jeff Yang, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on Rise. It's a great book, very innovative and very important.
Thank you so much. It's been a great conversation.
Jeff Yang is the co-author, along with Phil Yu and Philip Wong, of Rise, a pop history of Asian America from the 90s to now. Find out more at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Anais Mitchell, John Darnielle, and Jeff Yang. If you want to hear it again or catch up on past episodes, click over to Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast catcher and click subscribe, follow, and like. And you can keep up with us during the week online at WPR.org/beta or on Twitter at WPRbeta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
He's a Renaissance master of the highest order.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
Not now. I'm conducting a job interview.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
I have a typographic memory. I recollect the written word with considerable accuracy and detail.